Hi, friends. Welcome to part two of the Helping Friendly podcast, episode number 75. We're here with Alan Paul. He's chosen some more tracks for us to listen to and enjoy. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll just throw it right to the music, and we'll see you on the other side. Hope you enjoy.
Thank you. All right, and we're back. And what we listened to was Drowned from 6/29/2000 in Holmdel, New Jersey. Roses Are Free from June 8th, 2012 in Worcester. I'll never say it right, so yeah. Go ahead and embrace saying it wrong. Tweezer from 12/10/99 in the Philly Spectrum. Simple, 10/21/96 at Madison Square Garden. And Money, Love, and Change from Trey Band, 4/11/14. That was at the Wani Festival. And that was some great stuff, guys.
Wani sounds like it's in the middle of Indiana, right?
Like, Wani's in Florida. Jacksonville. Great spot. Okay.
Awesome. I'm thinking of Pawnee. Remember, that's like
Pawnee, yeah.
Yeah, that show, whatever that is. Anyway, sorry.
So, Alan, why don't you start us off and tell us why you picked this Holmdel show?
Yeah, I picked these because, the 6/29, 2000 at Holmdel is the one that got away from me. It's kind of a long story, but I'm good buddies with Dean Ween, and I tried to get Dean. Now, the next thing we're going to talk about is December 99 at the Spectrum. They played there December 10th and 11th, and I went to both of those shows. They were great shows, to go out of order. That's a couple songs down. We're talking about Tweezer.
No worries.
But on those shows at the Spectrum, I was supposed to bring Dean. He was supposed to come with me, and he punked out. He had never seen Phish. He didn't like Phish very much. He didn't have much good things to say about them, although he kind of liked Trey, and he liked the fact that they did Roses Are Free. So we were supposed to go. He punked out, and I talked to him. He kept saying he wanted to go. So when they were playing at the Art Center, which is fairly close to New Hope, where Dean and Gene Ween live, I called Diener up again, and he's like, all right, yeah, I'm going to go this time. So I arranged the whole thing for Dean and Gene to come, and I was supposed to meet them there, and I ended up having a family emergency, so I couldn't go. Mm. So, but they did actually go. I arranged for Ween and Phish to meet. It was one of my great achievements that I was excited about, and then I just didn't actually get to partake in it or see it happen.
So this, which show again was it? Was it the Spectrum or the Holmdel one?
The Spectrum I went to, and I was supposed, he was supposed to come with me.
That's the one he punked out on. Gotcha.
But he punked out on.
Gotcha.
Those two shows are intimately linked for me because of that. So
amazing.
I wasn't there, but 6/29. 2000, Dean and Gene Ween were there. They were backstage. They hung out. They were treated like royalty by Phish. And
excellent.
I think that they wanted them to come out and play Roses Are Free, and they wouldn't do it. They didn't want to play. They just wanted to drink the booze.
Fair enough.
Sounds about right for Ween. So, I think the first time Phish played it was like 97, maybe early 97.
Yeah,
and
that sounds right.
Did Dean or Gene tell you anything about it? Did they just say they heard it, or they knew about it, or you know what I mean? Was there any details?
I don't know Gene nearly as well. I mean, I've interviewed him a bunch, but just more normal professional relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Dean is sort of my buddy. He just kind of, he's just like, yeah, cool, some guys, yeah, whatever. They did Roses Are Free. they used to really like to make fun of Phish and make fun of jam bands until they kind of realized what a good career move it was for them to latch into the jam band world and they started playing festivals and stuff.
Nice.
But I think they really had a good time there. And Trey, and I'm sure everyone else, but Trey's the guy Dean and I talked about, was really, really nice to them and very, very generous and thankful to them. So
cool.
They had a great time, and it's just always bugged me that I wasn't there.
Sure.
And to top it off, it was, I've listened to it. I think it was a really strong show. So,
Yeah. And the Drowned that we just played here, everybody's just been through it. I mean, it's a ripper. Mm-hmm. They draw that out, and it's another cover,
Yeah.
But this is one that ever since they played it, for Halloween when they did Quadrophenia, they made it their own, and they've really... it's an excellent version.
Yeah,
and while we're talking all about Ween and Fish, it bears noting that they are both the top cards at the Lochan Festival. So
right, which is incredible. And you know, I know that Ween, their breakup, you know, was not commercially minded. They just had a hard time getting along, and they needed to take a break. But in a weird way, it turns out to be like the greatest career move they could have made. They've come back, and they're, you know, more popular and in demand and bigger than ever. So
I know the Colorado shows were just, I mean, you know, for Ween fans, just out of this world. So
yeah, and it's amazing to see, you know, they are the co-headliners sort of Lochan, and they're built on top of Tedeschi Trucks Band and lots of other bands.
My Morning Jacket and such.
Yeah, so that's sort of an amazing thing. So tip of the hat to Ween. I'm happy for them.
As you mentioned, one last thing, I guess, as you mentioned, they're not exactly the jam band culture, and My Morning Jacket and Ween aren't exactly two bands I think of as alike. So it's a great festival that will bring, I guess, all types together, which is the whole point. So
it's even got me to go to a festival.
Yeah, and maybe, I mean, I don't know exactly what the timing will be, but maybe, you know, Lochan loves to have these jams, so maybe Ween will finally play Roses Are Free with Fish.
Yeah, there's all that speculation, which also comes with festivals, which is fun.
Right, and especially at Lochan, which is really designed around these, you know, interactions.
So the next thing we have here, I mean, I think these all kind of flow together conversationally, is that, you know, we have Roses Are Free from 2012. Right. And I don't think it's the longest one they've ever played, but it's certainly a good one. I really enjoyed listening to that one today. This whole set of music put me in a great zone this afternoon.
Oh, good.
When I was coming home, it was really quite pleasant. But
well, and listen, that's what it's all about. You know, we can talk about everything else to our, you know, faces are blue, and you can analyze it, and you can break it down. But it's all about putting you in a good zone and getting where you need to be, whatever that is. So it's always good to remember that and keep that perspective, because I think it is easy to lose that as you break everything down.
I'll have you know that there's only, what, three Roses Are Free on the Fish.net jam chart, where they recommend or highly recommend a song, a version of a song. Alan, I know this is probably more than you want to know, but this is one of those versions. This is more than one of those versions. Or this is one of those versions. One of those three versions.
Yeah, and it's great, and it is really a great song, and I totally, totally respect always did that Fish, you know, latched onto that and figured it out and heard it and started playing it and realized that it would work for them.
Yeah, it's got the goofy lyrics like every other, you know, most of their songs do and all that, so.
Well, you know, it's again, like The Drowned and most of the covers that reoccur, you know, they made it their own.
Mm-hmm.
And plenty of people out there go a long time without knowing it's a Ween song.
That's true.
You know, absolutely. Unless somebody says, you know, that's a Ween song, right?
Right. Well, and you know, as we were saying, I think more people even know who Ween are now. I mean, you know, they were really a culty band in 96, 97, whenever they started playing that.
And I assume that the original crossover between the two bands came, you know, either just being, you know, not even because they weren't really geographically close, but they were label mates when they first.
They were label mates, but as far as, you know, I don't think I've, to the best of my memory, I've never asked Trey where he got the idea, but and they, not only were they label mates, but they actually shared a publicist for a while. You know, who I worked with on doing interviews with both of them, and I don't know why it was up to me to introduce them. It seems kind of insane that hadn't happened.
Just running in different circles.
Yeah, I guess. And maybe, you know, Ween wasn't going to meet someone because their publicist told them to.
Yeah, that's right.
It might have just been as simple as that. I don't know, but
too many birds.
You know, that's what happened.
Yeah, oh yeah. Ween were not into the patchwork pants. That's for sure. Awesome. So the next tune that you chose was the Tweezer that we talked, or from the show we talked about. Tweezer actually opened that show at Spectrum. An epic December run from the winter of 99.
Yeah, and I saw both of those shows at the Spectrum, and I just thought they were great. the whole thing. And one of the coolest things was I had, I had a backstage pass, and I was backstage while they were playing. At one point, I was just kind of roaming around, and, you know, I'm also a big basketball fan, so mm-hmm. it was so cool to me to be in the Spectrum.
Sure. Right.
And I wandered back to get a drink, and I walked into what was actually, like, their hospitality room where they had, like, booze and stuff.
Betty Ford.
And it was the old Sixers locker room. Now, Sixers had been out of the Spectrum for quite a few years by then.
Like, yeah.
But they still had the names on the lockers, above the lockers.
From the last season, probably, right?
From the last season they were there. They had the names. And it was amazing. It was such a cool experience. And so I, had a drink in there and took that in. I took some pictures, which I can't find. I have looked for them. And wandered back out and just, that just launched the show to a whole new height, and the Spectrum was just a special place, and you're in there and you're underneath the, all the Sixers banners and the Flyers banners and stuff, and the shows were great, and just another really special night in my memory.
It's a great room. I remember the first time Fish played in there was in 95, and Trey, made a point of telling everybody that the first concert he ever saw was Jethro Tull in that room, and many years earlier.
Also a huge Flyers fan.
That's amazing. I actually did not know that. Although I did know that, he of course grew up nearby and that was a special place and that he had seen a lot of shows. But I didn't realize that was the first one. That's amazing.
Yeah, and he was pretty, that was 12/15/95, and I'm probably a nerd to know that. But I was at that show and it was a lot of fun.
If you were there, it's not nerdy.
Yeah, exactly.
So the other thing we talked about on the first part of the episode was your newest ebook, The Reckoning. In the interview with Trey and Phil, Trey mentions the part I remember reading. He talks about how he just had 100,000 Fish fans down in Florida. But that was at the end of this specific, December 99
right,
tour.
A couple weeks later.
Yeah, so that's cool.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, and I think they were really, really were building to something there.
Yeah.
And I think that Trey now, especially, is very open about looking back and saying we should have just stopped after the millennium.
Right.
I don't think that, I'm sure that you don't, that everything after it sucked or anything. That would be a gross simplification, but
we just listened to something that was 7 months later.
That's right, from a few months later.
But
I think I think that leading up to it, through that fall and winter, was just the shows were getting stronger and stronger, and those Spectrum shows to me were very, very memorable musically. Aside from also that cool experience I mentioned of the locker room, they were very, very strong musically.
Awesome, that's great. So, I think we've worn that one out. Let's talk about the simple. Let's talk about the simple from MSG. It's funny because we talked about the first time they played it, which was New Year's Eve in 94. Then they played Eve and New Year's, New Year's, the day before New Year's Eve in 94. Then they played the day before and New Year's Eve in 95. And then in 96, they played in October. It's kind of a funky little schedule, but this is one of those shows, 10/21/96, the simple.
Right, and it was, I think, and again, as I said last week, I'm not a good counter. I don't keep track. I don't know how many shows I've seen, et cetera. So I don't know the first time I saw Fish at the Garden, but it was in 96. They played a couple of there, right?
In 96, yep, and they played two in 95, two in 96, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if I was there on this one or the other one, but
okay.
I think it was 10/21. I'm fairly sure. So that's why I picked this. I didn't remember anything about the show in terms of the songs because I didn't know the songs very well.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't hearing them as songs, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
I was just taking in the whole experience, and it was one of the first times that I was just kind of blown away and gobsmacked by the whole thing. And I guess it was just, when was Clifford Ball? Was it next summer?
It was the previous summer. Well, I mean,
okay, so this wasn't the first time I saw. All right, hold on. So
right.
I told you 96. I saw them, I guess, at the Garden in 95.
Yeah.
Take it all back.
No, it's remember, a terrific time to see them.
You saw the, I remember you said that last part of the episode that you saw them in 95, so.
Yeah, I definitely saw him before. I definitely saw him at the Garden before Clifford Ball, so I guess it was 95.
Awesome. And, that, and those were like the New Year's Eve run, just two shows. And then, yeah, then,
right.
So the following
summer. I've seen very, there's been, in this, in our musical world, there's so many great concerts on New Year's Eve. And I've seen very few of them because my wife doesn't really want to do this on New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen a lot of great music on December 30th.
Right.
And then in recent years, as Fish has expanded on January 1st and 2nd.
Sure. That's great.
I mean, not too much New Year's Eve.
And are you in love with the Garden itself as a music venue? Or no? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
It's a common sense.
No. Mm-hmm. I'm actually not in love with the Garden as a music venue. Especially now, the New Garden.
Mm-hmm.
You can't walk all the way around, and people.
Yeah, it's not quite the same, but I am, especially at that time, in the early mid '90s. I was relatively new to New York. Still, I mean, maybe been there 4 or 5 years, and so it was still really exciting every time I went to the Garden. And more to the point, when a band would play the Garden. Especially a band playing it for one of the first times, I felt like it was special because they made it special, because they were so excited, because the Garden has so much mythology and reputation that they would just be so fired up that it would be really special. So I mm-hmm. felt like it came more from the artist than it came ever came from me feeling like, wow, I'm at the Garden.
Okay. I get it. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't, you know, the first time I was there, wasn't even for Fish, and I was,
same
you know,
here.
I was walking into it like expecting the heavens to open up, and I was like, okay, like we had to go up some stairs, and now we're on this floor,
right.
And you know, it's a great room. I mean, it's really awesome, and the ceiling's incredible to look at, and I like how the floor bounces a little bit.
Right,
but
well, and I've seen, you know, I've seen some great shows there. I saw mm-hmm. the Dead there a bunch of times, and I saw the Allman Brothers there and some big tribute concerts, and I saw Bruce Springsteen there. So I've seen a lot of music, and so it does start to have that resonance. You know, I said that in company there last fall, and it does feel sort of special. But I don't, you know, I do think it's somewhat overrated, put it that way.
Awesome. I like, this is, you know, we like the alternating opinion around here. You know, I don't know if that's the right word. Anyway, so the simple from that run was great. I've heard people refer to simple as kind of like a comforting or like a long lost friend kind of tune where they just, you know, feel like they know it before they've heard it. No,
right, and just like slipping into a pair of old shoes or something.
Yeah, exactly.
The jam that they were doing and toying with when they were playing this in 96, once it finally kind of became its own song instead of a thing that broke up the Mike's groove, it's a terrific piece of music. And, you know, they flogged it for a while to make it a terrific piece of music. And so this is a good example of the payoff.
Right.
So the next track is a Trey Band track.
Right.
Money, Love, and Change, which is a great song.
And I hadn't, you know, I picked this because prior to that, I've seen the Trey Band several times in the last few years now, and really enjoyed it every time. But I hadn't seen them in quite a few years before that. And that was not long after One Way Out, my Allman Brothers book had come out, and I was actually on the bill at Wandy. I did a talk with J-Mo, you know, the great drummer from the Allman Brothers, who's one of my favorite people in the world, a major character. So he and I, after his band played at the Mushroom stage, a smaller stage, I was walking with him back over to the backstage of the Peach stage, the larger stage. And J-Mo moves kind of slow, plus he's really friendly and talks to everyone. And so it took us about a good hour and a half to make that walk because we were talking. He stopped the shop. His daughter wanted the shop. And he and I actually bought matching patchwork pants. JMO went into one of those hippie booths and bought a pair of patchwork pants, and then he said to the guy, "You got a pair for my friend here?" You know, I couldn't say no, so emerged from this little tent wearing patchwork pants with JMO. And by the time we started making our way backstage, Trey had started. And so we were walking, and JMO stopped, and he listened to it, and he said, "Hey, hey, is that Trey?" I said, "Yep." And he goes, "Oh, yeah, is he singing?" I said, "Yep, he's singing." He goes, "He sings pretty good. He sings pretty good." And then we kept walking across. He's playing, and he grabs me. He goes, "That's him playing guitar, right?" Said, "Yeah." He goes, "He plays guitar pretty good. He's a hell of a lot better with his band than he is when he plays with the Allman Brothers."
Right, I think he had sat in with them probably, but he sat in with them just a couple of times, if I remember.
Yeah, well, he actually sat in with them that night. Later that night, he played with them. Yeah, and I've seen Trey at least I think twice at the Beacon with them.
Right.
Trey is fine. It's not like he sucks when he plays with the Allman Brothers, but he's definitely, you know, a little more inhibited than he is when he's playing with his own band.
Sure.
And so we walked all the way across this giant field listening to Trey, and every few steps, you know, we would stop and Jimbo would make some other comment to me, complimentary comment about Trey, you know. "Good, that's a good groove, you know. That drummer's good. You know, Trey sounds really good." So that was just memorable for that whole experience, again, of walking across the field with JMO grooving to the Trey band.
Awesome.
Yeah, and that's a pretty ripping version. I found a partial video of it. I couldn't find the whole track on YouTube. I was disappointed after watching half of it that I couldn't find the whole thing to watch it, because they really get down on that thing. So
I thought that whole show was really great. So I made it to the back. I delivered JMO to his trailer, and I went back out front and watched the rest of the show from the front of the stage, and I thought it was really, really strong.
I have to say that I think the album, like that, it's self-titled, or you know, the Red album that show or that song is on, along with just some other Trey Van songs, is his best album and best work. So I'm really happy you picked that track.
Yeah, good. Well, cool. I think when you see Trey with the with his band rather than Fish, you see a different part of Trey. Mm-hmm. It's just like seeing Warren with Government Mule and the Allman Brothers and Warren Haynes band or whatever. I mean, when you like someone and you admire their musicianship, it's kind of a treat to get to see them in different settings. And that's one of the reasons that the sit-ins can be fun. I mean, we talked about some of the ways that sit-ins can be a drag. You know, you have to put up with the threat of a drag for the possibility of something really cool happening.
Some greatness, sure.
Because when somebody gets thrown, you know, a little bit off their normal stride, sometimes really great things happen.
Well, you know, I always look at those sit-ins as this could be a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Mm-hmm. Whatever is about to happen. Somebody comes on stage that's not part of the band that's going to sit in with Fish or whomever you're seeing. You know, this could be a big moment. And even if it's a train wreck, if it's a train wreck, it's more likely a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
Right.
Back.
That's true.
But
that's not happening again.
Everybody's on their toes when somebody walks out on stage, which makes it exciting.
That's great. You know, I just saw Mike's band last month up in Flagstaff, and that was amazing. Like, his band, Mike, doing his thing with guys who are absolute, just excellent musicians. It's kind of the same sort of thing as Trey. Trey's got more of a history, I guess, with his current band than Mike does, but Mike's been playing with his own band for a while, and it was outstanding. Like, blown away by how good they were. I was going in expecting greatness, but even blown away after that. So,
right. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you one funny Mike story that you'll appreciate before we go, which is, so I was at the Fare Thee Well concerts, last summer, which were great. And for the last two of the three, I was able to get into the Friends sort of viewing area, which was crowded. You know, I mean, it was great. It had a good spot to see, but they only had two Port-a-Johns in there and a lot of people.
Lots of friends.
So, yeah. You know, it was a little bit of a drag. But, you know, you just wait in line, listen to the music. It was okay. So I'm waiting in the line, and I'm getting up to the front, and Mike was in there, and he comes walking up to walk in the bathroom. And then he, as he's about to walk up, he realizes there's this long line. Because, you know, we were a few steps back, so you're not crowding the thing. And he saw it, and he sort of, I saw the look on his face, you know, which is that look of panic, like, oh, no, I really got to pee. There's a really long line. And so I said to him, go ahead, go in front of me. And he said, no, I can't do that. And I said, please, go in front of me. Mm-hmm. Not only do I not mind, but I would be upset if you don't. And I'm sure everybody behind me feels the same way, please. So he sort of very hesitantly did it. He went ahead of me. So it was very clear to me that that was the right thing to do. You know?
Yeah.
Not a hard decision or a big deal, but his hesitancy to do it, I thought, was really the story there.
Yeah, him being humble enough to be like, I should wait my turn. That's awesome.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was just so obvious to me that he shouldn't wait his turn. He didn't have to do that.
No.
Nobody would possibly be upset.
I agree
so
with you.
So he reluctantly did do it. He thanked me and
awesome.
Cut me.
Then he gave you a scarf. No, just kidding.
those are nice scarves.
Yeah, those are nice
scarves. No, I never saw him again. By the time he came out, I was in the other ones. So.
Awesome. Cool. Well, that was great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, we appreciate you taking the time from your day, your busy schedule, to join us in our fledgling podcast. Although we're 75 episodes in at this point. I mean,
that's
pretty good. No, it's my pleasure. I love talking to anyone who loves music and is in it for the love of the music, because that's why I started doing this. That's why I still do it. So
great.
Totally my pleasure to share the passion.
So we mentioned your new ebook, Reckoning: Conversations with the Grateful Dead. We recommend everybody check it out. Both Jonathan and I have read it, and it was a really awesome read, especially the Robert Hunter part. Even though there's a Trey and Phil interview, I would still say the Hunter part was a wonderful.
You know, it's all good. I mean, you got Dick LaValla, you got the interviews with the guitar players are kind of unique. You don't really see those. You know, Mark Caron, Steve Kimmock.
You mean like the side Kimmock and Mark Caron and Warren and you know the Jerrys and Jimmy Herring.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Those are a treat to check out as well.
Actually, I wanted to ask you, Alan. Have you seen Dead & Co. And what do you think about John Mayer?
I saw it and I really enjoyed it more than I thought I would. I think a lot of people had that same reaction. I saw them at the Garden, actually, talking about last fall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's something about it that is definitely a little weird. You know, O'Teal is, you know, of course, from the Allman Brothers and somebody I know well. And he's a great guy. I'm happy for him. I mean, my first thought about the whole thing is I was just happy for him because he needed a good gig and you know, got it in spades. And I thought that he was great in it, and I thought that he and John and Jeff Tremonti, the three of them were hooking up in all kinds of really cool and interesting ways. And so I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, I think it's a whole new direction, and they're taking a different approach. You know, they're not really trying to quite mimic it. I think that John Mayer is sort of alpha omega guitarists are like Eric Clapton and Stevie Ray Vaughan, and as I said at the beginning, I kind of come at all this from a blues thing, so it's interesting to me to hear, you know, someone playing lead guitar in a sort of Eric Clapton early 70s style, taking on the Grateful Dead catalog. That's sort of how I hear
it. That's a great
point.
And
you know, and O'Teal, I think, is a great bass player. And, you know, different and unique. And so I like it. I think it's fresh. And I hope that they can maintain that freshness all, you know, through an extended tour. I look forward to seeing that as well this summer.
Great, great. Thanks for that. Again, the book's Reckoning, or ebook is Reckoning: Conversations with the Grateful Dead. We'd also recommend One Way Out, which is really the definitive history of the Allman Brothers Band that Alan wrote. Alan is on Twitter at Al Paul. He's his blog is at alanpaul.net, and Facebook's Alan Paul Author on the Facebook. So thanks again for joining us, Alan. It was a great chat, and there's some epic stories that I think our listeners will, I mean, just be blown away by.
Yes, thanks so much
Thank
for coming.
Thank you. Well, hope so. It was my pleasure. My story's no good without an audience, so appreciate you guys being interested. So
thanks
always
so
a
much.
Pleasure.